Because all of us are motivated to win. Everywhere I go, all over this nation, anytime I open it up to a question and answer session, whether it be with a group of coaches, a church group, businessmen, young people or old, the same question keeps coming to the front. And that is simply this. How do I become a winner? And in this time, in this nation, in this economy, we all more than ever want to be winners financially, physically, and I believe spiritually. It is, I think, very important to know and understand that we as human beings are made up of the basic characteristics that envelop us, physical, mental, and spiritual. If we fail to be motivated and developed in all those areas, it's like being on a tripod and soon we'll topple over one way or the other. So I'd like to touch on all bases tonight because I think all bases are important. There are many things that motivate me personally. I believe very strongly in self-motivation. We could talk about all the kinds and methods of motivation, but it all comes back to self-fulfillment, the things that turn you on, your hot button, where it is, and your ability to press that hot button and propel yourself into action. And the basic thing that I know about motivation is that I'm self-motivated. I press my own hot button and I propel myself into action. But there are many things that motivate me. I'm motivated extremely in this year of the start of the celebration of our 200 years as a nation. I'm motivated by the beautiful words and the songs that we just heard. A cold chill runs up and down my spine when I think about this great country in which we live. I'm motivated by those men and women 200 years ago that had a great dream, and because of their loyalty and their dedication, founded a nation, and we have enjoyed it. And I want to say to you very openly and very clearly today that millions of people across this world would give anything to be right where we are tonight, enjoying this great nation and all of the things that we have and the opportunities. So I'm motivated by loyalty without question. I think loyalty is a very important factor in human motivation. You show me a family that has disloyalty, and I'll show you a family that's a loser. And just the opposite, you show me one that is knitted tight with loyalty, and I'll show you a group of winners, a family that's a winner. The same thing's true in your business. You know this to be true. If you have disloyal men or women involved in your business, you're going to have a lot of trouble. Same thing's true on a football field or in a nation. Loyalty is a key. I won't have anybody on my coaching staff that's not totally loyal to me personally, to our university, and to our program and the way we're going to do it. I just won't have them. They've got to be great technicians and great coaches, fine men. They've got to believe in the worth of the individual. All of those things are important, but I won't have one that's not loyal. Loyalty caused a group of young men to become great when they could have been mediocre. They won a championship when they were not supposed to win, by and large because of loyalty. Loyalty to each other and loyalty to a coaching staff. So you can understand my desire to have loyal people around me. When I first took the job at Baylor University, there weren't a lot of folks knocking the door down to get in there and help us, you know, to join my coaching staff. I had a call from a guy out here in Grand Prairie, Texas. Phone rang, answered the phone. He said, "It's Bill Young, Y-U-N-G, from Grand Prairie, Texas." He said, "Coach Staff, I want to come down and talk to you." He was the head coach there, a very successful young man. I said, "Fine, Bill, come on down." I didn't know him that well, but I did know him. He came down to Waco, walked into my office, sat down, and I said, "Bill, what can I help you with?" He said, "Coach Staff, I want to come to Baylor University with you." I said, "You do? Why?" He said, "First of all, I believe in you. I believe in what you're doing and the way you're going about it, and I want to be a part of the success that you're going to have, and I want to help you achieve that success." I'll tell you, he got my attention, and he got it in a hurry. When he started talking about loyalty to me and loyalty to our program and belief that we could get the job done, yes, he got my attention. We talked for another hour and a half, and I found out that he was, though he didn't know me well, totally loyal to me, to the things that I stood for. And I hired him, and I've never regretted it. He was the offensive line coach, still is, and I think the greatest offensive line coach in America. Last year, I moved him up to become our offensive coordinator, and he did a super job, and the results is history. He's always very loyal and always very concerned about me as an individual. And in 1973, I can tell you, I didn't get the National Coach of the Year honors. We were 2-9. I didn't even get a vote in my household. There are 5 members in my household. So you talk about the valley and the mountaintop. I've been both places. I've been down in the valley and on the mountaintop, and I can tell you the mountaintop's a heck of a lot better. But being there in the valley at 2-9 in 1973, and for whatever reason we lost, it really doesn't make any difference. Injuries, lack of depth, schedule, whatever, it doesn't really matter. We lost and hurt. I don't believe I've ever hurt as badly in my life because I wanted to get it done yesterday, but we didn't. And I'll tell you another point. We didn't win a conference football game, lost 7 in a row in the Southwest Conference. Now, I want to say something to you very clearly. If you've never recruited in the Southwest Conference, never having won a conference game, you hadn't lived. Well, we did pretty well. We walked out on the recruiting trails and came in with a good group. We were very pleased with that, but we'd been going night and day, working 80, 90 hours a week, and we're all completely worn out, tired, and mentally and physically exhausted. All of a sudden, I'm sitting in my office, there's a knock on my door. I just call out to whoever's there, I said, come in. Door open, it's Bill Young. Bill's a great big guy, weighs about 250 or 60 pounds, and he just filled up the doorway, walked in, had a very serious look on his face. He had closed the door behind him. I knew it was something serious he wanted to talk about. I said, what is it, Bill? He said, Coach Stair, you're killing yourself. You're going night and day. You've been working for 2 years solidly. And if you don't get out of this office and get some rest, you're not going to be around here next year. You're going to kill yourself. And I'm here to tell you that unless you get out of here, I'm going to stay in this office and badger you until you do. I said, well, Bill, I appreciate your loyalty to me and your concern for my well-being, but I'm just fine. I have a lot of things to do. I don't have time to leave the office. I appreciate it. Just go on. Leave me alone, Bill. I said, I mean it, Coach. I'm not leaving this office until you tell me you're going to get out and get some rest. Let's go deer hunting. We can go down to my place down in the valley. We can go for about 3 days, get away from everything. I said, I don't have time. He said, please. I said, Bill, leave me alone. I don't have time. He said, one day. Okay, I'll go with you one day if you'll leave me alone. He said, that beats nothing. I'll come by in the morning, pick you up, and we'll go deer hunting for one day. But said, I don't know a place we could just go one day. I said, a guy called me up from Meridian, Texas. That's about 30 miles north of Waco. Said, come up and deer hunt. That was in 1972. I said, maybe you'll let us come this year. We'll go in the morning and find out. Bill came by at 6 o'clock the next morning, picked me up, loaded the guns in the car. My wife had a couple of sack lunches, got in the car and started north of Meridian. But here's a good point of loyalty as well. How many guys in the city of Waco in 1973, when we were 2-9, would I have gotten in a car with a loaded gun? Now, that's the loyalty. We're driving north to Meridian, roll the windows down. It's not too cold. Feel the cool breeze in my face. Everybody's feeling good. You know, we're relaxed. 10 miles south of Meridian, we come to a gravel road, turn off left, cruising down the gravel road, caliche dust billowing up behind us, and all of a sudden, about 10 miles later, we come to a ranch house. In front of the ranch house, there's a barbed wire fence about 30 yards out with a wooden gate. Bill pulls up close to the wooden gate. I get out of the car, walk through the gate, up on the porch, knock on the door. Inside the house, I can hear the sound of boots walking on a wooden floor, and all of a sudden, the screen door opens. A rancher steps out. He's startled to see me there and said, Coach Stamp, what in the world are you doing here? I said, well, sort of a long story, but we just decided to go hunting today, and you'd ask if I ever wanted to in 1972 that I could come out here, and here we are, and just one of my coaches, we'd like to hunt today. He said, listen, Coach Stamp, you can come anytime you want to, bring anybody you want to. My place is your place, and I'm so happy to have you out here. And Coach Stamp, while I've got you, let me just say to you that I'm so proud of what you've done at Baylor University. I know you didn't win this year, and I know that you wanted to desperately, but you're laying a foundation. You're going to win. You're doing it properly, and I support you 140%. I said, hey, that really makes me feel good. I appreciate you saying that. He said, I meant every word of it. I said, thank you so much. And I started to walk off the porch. And all of a sudden, he called out to me. He said, Coach Staff. I said, yes, sir. He said, could I speak to you just a moment? No, oh boy, here it comes. I said, yes, sir. I'll be happy to visit with you. He said, listen, I don't know how to approach you on this, but I have a tremendous problem. I can't solve it. And if I explain it to you, I hope you'll solve it for me. I said, well, I'll be happy to do anything I could for you, sir. You've been most gracious to me. He said, here's my problem. I said, Coach Staff, do you see the barn out there? I looked about 100 yards out, and there's an old barn. I said, yes, sir, I see the barn. He said, Coach Staff, look close to the barn. Do you see that old mule? I said, yes, sir, I see that old mule out there. Nice-looking old mule. He said, listen, Coach Staff, that mule's been with my family for 25 years. It's like a member of our family. And I I love it very deeply, and the mule is sick, it's diseased, it's very, very old, it's in tremendous pain, and it must be destroyed, and I just don't have the heart to shoot that mule. Coach Staff, would you shoot my mule? I said, listen, man, I'd rather not shoot your mule. I would be happy to chop some wood for you, do anything, but I don't really care about shooting your mule. He said, listen, do you understand that what it would mean to me to walk out there and shoot that mule myself, and my wife's the only one here, nobody will be around, you're the only one, would you do it? So, well, you put it on that basis. I don't really want to, but I will. I walked off the porch, back out through the gate, closed it behind me, and just about the time I get to the car, this impulse hits me. I don't really know what it was, but something came over me, and I set my lower jaw, let my lower lip start to quiver, squinted my eyes, gritted my teeth, pulled open the car door, and slammed myself down in the seat beside Bill Young. He looked at me, said, what's the matter, Coach? I said, Bill, that old man wouldn't let us hunt. He said, what? I said, Bill, that old man wouldn't let us hunt. He ordered me off this place. I've never been talked to like I was talked to. I'm sick of that kind of talk, Bill. You know what that old man said? He said, what'd he say? I said, that old man said I was the sorriest football coach in America. He didn't say that. He did too, Bill. And he said our offensive line couldn't break a paper sack. He said that. He sure did. He said we didn't have enough brains on that entire coaching staff to fill a thimble. And that Baylor University was the sorriest school in America academically. I tell you, Bill, I've had it up to here. I'm sick of that kind of talk. I'm going to fix that old man. I reached down, grabbed a rifle, pulled it up, and laid it on the windowsill. I said, Bill, you see that old mule? Bill turned ashen white. I reached down, grabbed a slug, slammed it into the gun. I said, Bill, I'm going to fix that old man. I'm going to kill his mule. Bill's eyes rolled back up in his head. I took aim on the old mule, raised the gun, and fired. It was a fantastic shot. The mule dropped dead. And Bill's just scrunched up against the seat. I keep my face turned. I wanted to carry this thing a little bit further. And I had my face turned, trying to get it straight. And just about the time I wheel my head around to carry this thing on, I hear two shots ring out. Bam, bam. Bill said, I got two of his cows. Let's get the heck out of here. I tell you, it wasn't near that funny when I got through paying for those cows, but it, right now it's all right. But I'll tell you one thing, that's an important point that we all must know and understand, that loyalty is a vital part of achievement. Too many times we want to get to the top by stepping on somebody else. We want to get to the top pulling away from the team instead of with the team. You're going to get to the top in your business or in your family life by loyalty quicker than any other way that I know of. That doesn't mean you have to agree on everything. We walk into a staff meeting and Bill Young, we'll go to Fifth City almost arguing over a point. But here's the key. Once we walk out of that staff meeting and we walk onto that football field with the plan, we're 140% together, and I don't care whose plan we decided on. The one we decided on, that's the way we're going. 140% together. Loyalty. If you want to be a winner, develop that in your life. There's so many other traits that I could mention to you tonight, but let me mention two or three that I think are most important. That if you want to be a winner in your business, your family life, in your personal life, then you develop the traits that are important to you. You may not think as an individual that there are certain characteristics that you have that are important. Too many of us look at the other fellow and say to ourselves, he has all the talent and the ability. You know, I just really don't have any talent and ability. Why is it that everybody else has the things that I'd like to have? Too many of us sit around and worry about what somebody else has instead of taking the talent and the ability that God has given us and develop it to the fullest. When I was a young man, I wanted to play high school football very desperately, and I had two problems. I was small and I was slow. And that's a serious problem when you want to play high school or college football. Well, I decided that I was going to overcome that some way. Somehow, some way, I was going to develop some talent that I had and get the opportunity to play. And the only thing that I had was the ability to hit. And in football, that's very important. You know, playing piano, that doesn't help you much. But football, that was very important. And I took that talent and that ability, developed it, never became a great star, but I did what I wanted to do. I wanted to play football, and I found a way to do it. Everybody in this room has talents that I do not have. I might have some that you do not have. But you know, I don't worry about those talents that you have. I worry about the talents that I have. I want to take them, develop them to the fullest. Thereby, I can become a happy, successful individual and a winner. I heard about a young man several years ago that impressed me tremendously. I read it in a story. He was a young Canadian, and he wanted more than anything else in the world to win a 10-mile Canadian marathon swim. Oh, he wanted it so desperately. He worked for 2 years in training. As I read the story about this, I became very engrossed and very excited about it because the American way, you know, is to put it on the line and win. And I wanted this guy to win because he set a goal, he worked to attain it, and he entered the race. 299 other men and boys in Canada entered this particular race. I believe this guy's name was Jimmy Black. We'll call him that. Jimmy Black entered along with those 299 other men and boys, and the race started. And I remember vividly reading the story, and I became so excited as Jimmy rushed out to the front to take the lead. About 9 miles to go, but he was in the lead, and I was very excited. He swam well, but he lost the race by half a mile. He tired at the end and fell behind. Oh, he beat 298 other men and boys, but he wasn't first. And you know that I was almost dejected about that. I was very upset and very sad that a young man had set a goal and worked to attain it and then fell short. And I started to close the book away, and there was one paragraph remaining there, and it put a lump in my throat that's never left. And it taught me a great lesson. I found out that Jimmy Black, who wanted more than anything else in the world to win a 10-mile Canadian marathon swim, came in second. But that young man had only one arm. If he had both arms, there's no question but what the guy would have won. See, he had everything else. He had the stamina, he had the desire, but he didn't have quite the equipment that the winner had. But I dare say that he did the best he could with what he had. And he never has to hang his head to a living soul. And that's an important thing for us to remember and for us to learn if we want to be winners. Because you can't win every time you step on the football field or every time you lay a line on the line a business deal. You can't win every time. But if you know in your own heart and your own mind that you did the very best you could with the talent and the ability that you had, you don't have to hang your head to a living soul. It is important, if you want to be a winner, to set goals and work to attain them. I'm very goal-oriented and have been since a small child. I believe you can set goals and work to attain them, and I believe that if they're realistic goals, that you can attain them. It's important to set realistic goals. It's important to write them down. And one of the things we do at Baylor University every spring is every member of my coaching staff and every player walks into my office, and we'll sit there for an hour and a half or 2 hours and talk about goals that they have written down on a card. I talk to them about how they're going to achieve those goals. They have set high and lofty goals in all areas, mental, physical, and spiritual. Last year, in fact, a year and a month ago, a young man walked into my office. He'd been a second-team offensive guard on a 2-9 season. He was 210 pounds. He handed me his goal card, and I looked him over, and he had some great goals. He wanted to graduate from Baylor University, which he's going to do this spring. He wanted to get a coaching job eventually and have the opportunity to coach in the high school ranks. He was in love with a young girl, and he wanted to marry her and have a Christian home, and all of those goals were tremendous, and we talked about them. Then I came to his athletic goals, the physical goals. I was startled when I read the first of three. He said, I want to be an All-Southwest Conference center. Well, there were two things wrong with that. Number one, he was a second-team, 210-pound offensive guard. Those were the two things that were wrong. He didn't even play center. I questioned him about it, and he said, well, that's a position that we need someone strong in if we're going to win. I think I can handle it, and I thought if you saw it on my goals, you'd move me. I said, well, you've got a good thought there, and I might do it, but let's talk about what you're going to do to attain those goals. He said, yes, sir. We started talking. I said, the first thing you're going to do is have to gain some weight. You weigh 210 pounds. We opened with the University of Oklahoma. Their nose guard's 255. We moved from there to Louis Kelcher's about 296 and everybody else in between. And you're 210 pounds. He said, I realize that, coach. And I'll do whatever it takes. Whatever it takes, I'll do it to achieve this goal. I said, okay, we'll see. You're going to have to develop skills. You're going to have to develop abilities that you don't have. And I want to see if you can do it. He said, Coach, whatever it takes, I want to be all Southwest Conference. I looked at his second goal, and I was even more startled. He wanted to be an All-American. Here's a second-team offensive guard, wants to be an All-American. That's ridiculous, you know. Well, the third one really got me. He wanted to help lead Baylor University to a conference championship. Maybe no one told him Baylor University hadn't won a conference championship in 50 years. Unrealistic goal, but fortunately, I didn't say to Aubrey Schultz, these goals are unrealistic. I said to Aubrey Schultz, these goals are attainable only if you're willing to put wheels to these goals in the form of work, dedicated, hard work. He said, I'll do whatever it takes. I moved him to offensive center, and I've never seen anybody work any harder. I've never seen anybody try any more to develop. At the end of spring, he was our starting center. He weighed 218 pounds. He gained 18 pounds, or 8 pounds, but that's not enough. I said, call me in the middle of the summer. Aubrey called me. I said, what do you weigh? He said, Coach, I weigh 221 pounds. That's great, but that's not big enough. He said, I'll get bigger. He reported in, weighed 229 pounds. We go up to play Oklahoma. They won it in the fourth quarter, and Aubrey had a fantastic day. In fact, their nose guard was moved, and they moved another nose guard in for the next game. Aubrey Schultz won the victory. Next game was against Missouri, and the same thing happened. Aubrey Schultz is developing into a football player that is terrific. Then we play Oklahoma State. Their nose guard weighs 288 pounds. They're the fifth-ranked team in the nation. They come into our stadium undefeated. And Aubrey Schultz did a miraculous job and led us to victory. And, of course, the rest is history. Aubrey Schultz did lead us to a conference championship, he and some other great young men. He, at the end of spring of the football season, was named unanimous choice as All-Southwest Conference Center. When the Football Writers All-American team came out, Aubrey Schultz was first-team All-American, and all of those things are impressive. I'm impressed with the fact that he wears a beautiful championship ring, a Cotton Bowl watch, he signed a pro contract. But you know the thing that really impressed me as much as all of those other things? At the end of the football season, after the Rice game, I carried Aubrey Schultz into the dressing room and weighed him personally. And Aubrey Schultz, now this is less than a year, weighed 245 pounds. Goals. He set those goals, and then he did what it took to attain them in all areas. If you want to be a winner, don't hesitate to set high and lofty goals, but be prepared to do what it takes to attain them. If you want to be a winner, there is a characteristic that I just don't think you can live without, and that's the ability, the deep, abiding ability never to give up and never to quit. I think it's one of the greatest characteristics that a man can have. Never give up and never quit. In 1974, Baylor University won 6 ball games in the fourth quarter. 2 times they're down 17 points at the half. But they wouldn't quit. I'd love to take the credit for being a great coach, but the secret is this. They wouldn't quit. They wouldn't give up. No matter what the odds, no matter what the adversity, they wouldn't give up and they wouldn't quit. Many young men on that football team epitomized that capacity. Our quarterback, Neil Jeffrey, is a stuttering, stammering young man. He's very thin, tall, very slow, really has no business playing college football. But he overcame adversity after adversity to become the starting quarterback in all Southwest Conference and help lead us to a championship. He wouldn't give up. He wouldn't quit. Even in those dark days of 1973 when we were 2-9 and a quarterback takes all the abuse that a coach ever takes, he wouldn't give up. He wouldn't quit. He came back to win. And that's a very important characteristic. Winston Churchill, who I consider to be one of the great motivators of all times and one of the greatest statesmen and one of the greatest men to ever live through the Second World War, led us all to victory by his dynamic stand against the foe. He said to the Germans, you come, we'll fight you in the streets and in the hedgerows, but we'll not give up and we'll not quit. And though bombed and strafed, England fought and stood as a great tower of hope for all of us. And after the World War, Winston Churchill, reaching elderly age, was asked to go to his old alma mater and speak to a group of young men. They were seniors that were graduating. The news media from all over the world gathered there and had their tape recorders and their newsreel cameras because they just knew that this great statesman was going to pour out upon them his great philosophy for life. Well, he did. But their long tapes and their long film was wasted. His speech took less than 10 seconds. He walked to the center of that stage and stood behind the podium and looked into the eyes of those young men, grasping for every word that he would say. And he said simply, "Never, never, never give in." And he turned and walked away. Hey, you talk about a philosophy for life. Never give up, never quit. The clock may run out on you some, but you'll win more than you'll ever lose if you won't give up and you won't quit. The last thing I want to mention to you, you may think a little bit strange coming from a college football coach, but I want to say it to you in the most serious way that I can say it. As we analyze motivation and as we analyze what it takes to become a winner, let me say to you that I believe the most important characteristic that you can develop is a personal relationship with God. Ooh, wait a minute, we're in a marketing meeting. We're supposed to be talking about selling, winning. And that man said that the most important characteristic in human life, if you want to be a winner, is to develop a relationship with God. That's what I said, and I mean it. You can win all the championships in the world. You can sell every piece of property in this city and make $10 billion. But unless you as an individual are in proper attune with your maker, you're the biggest loser that ever came down the pike. And you can put that in your pipe and smoke it, because that's the gospel truth. I believe with all my heart that we in the world of athletics worry too much about winning sometimes, though it's important and though we must win. But we should worry more about our own personal relationship with our fellow man and with God. Thereby we can become a great winner. There's a young man that I'd like to tell you about in closing. I admire him tremendously. He was a great athlete and had accomplished everything that an athlete should ever accomplish. And I use this as a point of illustration. In 1963, this young man, whose name was Brian Sternberg, became the world champion pole vaulter, 17 feet 4 inches, and that was before the great catapult. That young man were vaulting today, he'd be a 20-footer, and there's no question about it. Had the greatest techniques for vaulting, the greatest athletic talent probably that had come along in many, many years. The young man had never entered anything that he wasn't successful in. He was a great student. He entered the trampoline event in the NCAA and became the champion. He did a flawless triple somersault. Magnificent young man, 6 foot, 397 pounds, had the world by the tail, completely capturing everything that he ever involved himself in. He made the statement that he didn't need anybody, anything. He was totally self-sufficient, self-sustaining, totally able through his own mental capacities and his great physical strength to accomplish anything that was set before him. And that's a pretty good statement, you know. That's something we'd all like to be able to do. In 1963, that young man was tested tremendously. He was working out on the trampoline. He attempted a triple somersault. And I guess if you don't need a coach or you don't need anybody around you, and you're totally self-sustaining, you don't need a couple of spotters, and he didn't have anybody there. And he was trying his triple somersault, and he was just one minute fraction off. But he was off. He came down on the edge of the trampoline on the back of his neck and almost completely severed his spinal cord, and he fell to the floor of the gymnasium, a completely helpless, hopeless cripple. Brian would have died there, except the maintenance man found him, called the proper authorities. They came in, loaded him, carried him to the hospital, had all the equipment there, fortunately, and all of the great doctors. They came in, examined him. His respiratory system was faltering, and they said, "This man can't live more than an hour. Get his family." But Brian Sternberg, as you can imagine, is a fantastic competitor. And yes, he lived that hour, then he lived 12, then he lived 24, then he lived a week, a month, 2 months, five, six. Totally paralyzed except his eyes and his mouth. Unable to perform any human act. They strapped him in a certain kind of bed that rotates every 30 seconds so that he can have the respiratory system to continue to function. Thereby he was able to live. All the while strapped in that contraption, looking at the ceiling and then rotating and looking at the floor. Brian Sternberg, who had a definite void in his life because of his own ability to take care of every situation, became very embittered and very encrusted. He turned further and further away from any type of spiritual relationship he had with a supreme being and turned further and further away. A young girl that he had known in elementary school came to visit him. She had never seen him smile from the time they were in elementary school throughout his entire college career. He was a sophomore at the University of Washington when he was injured. She had never seen him smile. There was a void and a vacuum there. All of his accomplishments had never made him happy. She said to him, "Brian, what kind of relationship do you have with God?" And Brian really lashed out at her. He said, "I have no relationship with God. Why would I want a relationship with a God if there is one that would take away all my fantastic talent and ability and rob the world of everything I have to offer?" But she was persistent. She visited him for 6 months, every day visiting him, trying to cheer him up, and every day asking him the same question. Finally, she went away on a 3-week vacation. She returned, walked in the hospital room, and it was different. Something had changed. She didn't know what. All of a sudden, she walked over and looked down the hospital bed, and she saw the change. For the first time in her life, she had known Brian Sternberg, she saw a smile on his face. She thought the same thing you're thinking. The doctors had told him that he'd be able to get up and walk again, but in fact, the doctors had told Brian he'd never walk again. Why the smile? He told her. He said, "I finally did what you asked me to do. I put a direct relationship between me and God. Now, though I'm unable to perform any human act for the first time in my life, though I can't win anything, I have a fulfillment that I've never had before. And I'm happy for the first time in my life." It's a fantastic, true story. Brian Sternberg wanted to share that with other young people in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, of whom I'm so very proud, gave this dynamic young man an opportunity to do so. He became our area representative in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, northwest part of the United States, and he went all over the country speaking. Totally paralyzed. Fantastic story. Because all of us are interested in winners, and there was a winner, and he had a great story. In 1968, I was assistant coach at Texas Tech, and I carried 8 football players to Estes Park, Colorado, FCA conference. Walked in. The speaker for the evening is to be Brian Sternberg. I wanted to hear him desperately. I was the first one in the meeting room, a vast auditorium like this filled with over 1,000 young people from all over the nation. Coaches, pros, high school. I was the first one in. I sat on the front row. You know, the first thing they did, they turned out all the lights, turned on a motion picture projector, and there on the screen in front of us projected the image of a young man about 6'3", muscles rippling down his back, picked up a pole and executed a vault 17 feet 4 inches to set a world record. Boy, the oohs and the ahs in that auditorium told you what kind of athletic accomplishment that was. That guy was a winner. They turned off the projector, rolled up the screen, opened the curtains in total darkness. All of a sudden, the spotlight comes on, shines on a single chair with a microphone in front of it. I watch, looking from my left to right, moving towards center stage. I see a massive figure. I wondered who in the world that was and what they were carrying. Well, I found out pretty quickly that it was a great big college football player by the name of Wes Wilmer, and what he was carrying was Brian Sternberg. Looked like a Charlie McCarthy doll. He was 87 pounds now, his head bobbed from left to right, his arms angled limply to his side, and hanging over the massive arm of Wes Wilmer were two what were once pistons of power, now just simply bones and flesh. The legs of Brian Sternberg. Wes walked to that center chair and placed Brian down so very gently. He reached down, grabbed his right breeches leg, pulled it up, and dropped it over his left. Brian told me afterwards that night, he said, "Coach Staff, that's to make me look human." They stuck a pillow under his right arm, another under his left arm, so that he wouldn't fall out of the chair, and then slid the microphone up under his mouth. And Brian started to speak, and I want to tell you, what he had to say was powerful. He talked about his life filled with accomplishments, but yet never feeling like a winner. Never in his own being feeling that he was a self-motivator that was filled with accomplishment. It was a fantastic story, and Brian Sternberg's respiratory system is so weak that many times after he's spoken for about 5 minutes, he'll just pass out. And he was getting very weak, but he had something that he wanted to say to those young people, and I am so thankful to this day that I sat in the auditorium and heard from his lips what he had to say. It seemed to me as though he moved closer to the microphone, though I know he didn't, but it seemed as though he did. And in a gasping, raspy voice, as he gasped for air, Brian Sternberg leaned to the mic and said, "My young friends, let me close with this statement. Oh, I pray to God that what has happened to me would never happen to a one of you. Oh, I pray to God you'd never know the humiliation of not being able to perform one single human act. No, I pray to God you'd never know the pain that I live in daily. Oh, it's my hope and my prayer that you would never have to go through what I've gone through, unless, my young friends, that's what it takes for you to put God in the center of your life. Now, you talk about making the hair stand on the back of your head. What that young man was saying to those of us hale and hearty in that auditorium was simply this. Number one, he was glad that it happened to him. And number two, if that's what it took for us to become a winner, then he hoped it happened to us. It's my hope and my prayer, as we in the business world and in the world of athletics and education and whatever we might be involved in, as we strive to become motivated and to become winners, oh, it's my hope and my prayer that we'll understand that a key is self-motivation. How you think, how you act is important. Loyalty is a key. Setting goals is very, very important. Never giving up, never quitting, and doing everything you can to the best of your ability is very, very important. But the most important thing is putting God squarely in the center of your life.